Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and life coach Wendy Dillard here. Today is Monday, February the 12th, 2018, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, our second daily dose of happy for the day. And we're getting closer and closer to our newly added time slot on Tuesday evening. That's Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time for those of you who've wanted to call into the show but just had not had the chance to do it because you were at work or the drive time wasn't a good time to do it or whatever. Well, all your excuses are gone now because we're making this time slot available, and Tom Wells and I are going to be there starting tomorrow night to answer your phone calls and your questions. And you don't even have to have a phone to contact one. That's the best part. If they've got a computer and connection to the internet, there are apps they can use to connect right in, and boom, they're talking to us. It's great. I'm loving it.
That's cool. So, Walt, is all the new information on loatoday.net?
It is. It's on the homepage. You'll find all three methods that you can use to connect to us while we're doing the calls right there. Just look beneath the player. There's a whole description there and links to click and all kinds of cool stuff. But you can connect by phone. You can connect by having just a web browser on a desktop or laptop computer with like a headset, or you can just use your smartphone and download an app. I mean, three great ways to do it. It's really pretty special, this new system.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is.
That's awesome.
It's really good. So how was your weekend? Did you have a good one?
My weekend was fabulous, as usual. Yeah, and I had something really kind of interesting that happened today I wanted to just share.
Yeah, sure.
I guess you could call it a win, but to me it was just something, it was a big notice. I have this mole that I've wanted to have removed forever. I think I've had it since birth. And I just thought, you know, if I scratch, I kind of like hit it and then it bleeds. And I'm like, you know what? It's a cosmetic thing. I wouldn't mind if it was just gone.
Mm-hmm.
It's under my clothes, so it's not even like anyone can see it. So it's totally for me.
Right.
So anyway, maybe about a month or so ago, I was thinking about, well, who do you have to remove this? And I did some Googling, and I learned you go to a dermatologist. And, you know, I certainly don't suspect it's anything cancerous since I've had it for over 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
I just want it removed. So I was kind of asking my inner guidance to kind of give me some indication where to go. And at first I was Googling, and you know, I love things that are close by where I don't have to, like, get into horrible traffic. And, you know, I was thinking what's close by, but I'm like, I don't know dermatologists. I've never had need of one before. And so I was, you know, Googling dermatologists near me, and I saw several places. But then I went, I don't know which one to pick.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some stuff when I was reading online that made it seem like, well, you want to make sure you have this, and you want to make sure you don't have that. And I'm like, don't know what to do. So as I was asking for guidance, what came to me was, next time I go to my chiropractor, which I go to monthly, ask him for a referral, because
okay,
he's been incredibly helpful in the past when I needed a referral. Well, because I see him monthly, this came right after I'd just seen him, so it's like for 3.5 weeks I was waiting to ask him. So finally I go to my chiropractor last Wednesday. First thing out of my mouth is, hey, do you have a referral for me? And he goes, yep, I do. And out he pulls his little contact, you know, thing of business cards, hands me a business card. I write the information down, and I said, okay, so why did you pick him? And he said, oh, well, he's the best. And I said, so, and I joked with him. I said, so when I go see him, if I tell him I know you, will he, like, send me away? And he laughed. He goes, no, he actually doesn't even know me. And I said, well, then why would you pick him as a referral if you don't even know him? He said, I've had many of my patients have gone to him, and I've learned about him on my own, and as far as I'm concerned, he's the best. And I was like, okay, so I know if my chiropractor says he's the best, then he is. So that was last Wednesday, and since then I've been asking, okay, you know, can I call that doctor and set an appointment? And I kept sensing, not yet, not yet, not yet. So this morning I was up and I was sitting behind my computer and I saw the little business card where I wrote down his phone number, and I kind of got, okay, you could call now. And I'm like, yay. So I call the office, you know, ask all the important questions. Do you take my insurance? Da, 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 da. And as I was learning more about him and his practice, I found out I wouldn't actually be seeing, let's call him Dr. Daniel. I wouldn't actually be seeing Dr. Daniel. I'd be seeing his physician's assistant. And I said, okay, so patients don't see Dr. Daniel? No, only if the physician's assistant has determined that it needs to be escalated, or if the biopsy comes back and finds that it's cancerous, because he's a cancer surgeon for removing moles, et cetera. And I was like, So something about that wasn't feeling as good to me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so then she said, would you like an appointment? I said, okay. She goes, well, right now our appointments we're setting are for like about 3 weeks out. I said, oh, bummer. Well, I'm on vacation from work this week. I was really kind of hoping I could get in at least for a first consultation this week. So she says, well, let me check the calendar, see if there's been any cancellations. So she said, well, actually, there's a cancellation tomorrow at 1:30. Would you like that? And I'm thinking, the only thing I've booked all week is a hair appointment tomorrow at noon. And these two appointments are at totally opposite ends of the world, like an hour away. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to miss my hair appointment. And then I'm thinking, I have a show with you at 3 o'clock Central Time. And I'm like, what if I'm not out in time? And I'm like, that's not going to work. So I said, gosh, that timing really isn't good. Is there anything else? And so she looked. She said, no. And I said, all right, let's just look at 3 weeks out. And while she was saying it, while she was looking at the calendar, it just didn't feel very good to me. And I just said, you know what, I really appreciate all of your information, et cetera. But I said, I'm not quite sure right now because it was Dr. Daniel that was referred to me. I don't know anything about this person, this physician's assistant, and so she's not the one who is referred to me. And, you know, of course, you know, the receptionist gave me all the reasons why she would be perfectly lovely, and, you know, I was in agreement. But I said, you know what, I'll call back later if I'm interested. She said, okay. So I just sat there and I went, well, this is interesting because I live a life of following my inner guidance. Yep. And why on earth would my chiropractor tell me one guy and then that end up not feeling good to me? So I let go of that question for a moment and just kind of said, so what's next? And what came to me was go back and do another Google search, dermatology near me. So I did, and I see something that's really close by, and I looked at the website, and I looked at the doctor, and I went, oh, he has such a happy face, and that meant something to me. And then I looked at the website, and I went, oh, his website feels so inviting. So I make a call, talk to that receptionist, and turned out they have an appointment on Wednesday morning. So I'm like, okay, well, that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I learned that he's the one who does the surgery, if it's necessary, because I don't know, it's kind of a large mole, so it might be something they can't just freeze off,
mm-hmm.
and that they do it right there in the office. So even though I might have to come back, like the first day of the consultation, I might have to return for the actual procedure, it's close by. Even if I'm working when it happens, it'll be something I won't have to take off a whole day of work. It just seemed really easy peasy. And even though this might sound silly, even when I was on music hold, I don't particularly like Asian music, but it was like an Asian sound, but that was really upbeat. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm even liking this Asian music. Like everything about the experience.
That's pretty wild.
When calling this doctor's office felt good. And so I got off the phone. I had made my appointment, and I just thought to myself, why on earth was I led to get my chiropractor's, you know, referral if I didn't use it? And then the thought came to me. I had actually, the doctor, I'm going to call him Dr. Tim. So Dr. Tim, who I'm about to see on Wednesday, I'd actually seen his website when I was Googling a month before. But at that time, I had so many questions swimming in my head, like, how do I know which one to pick and how do I know who's good and all that stuff. And I thought, go ask your chiropractor. By getting the referral today, what happened is when I called Dr. Daniel's office and it didn't feel right, it helped to solidify a bit of clarity about what I don't want, which is I didn't want to drive that far away. He's in a hospital community thing. I hate the parking there. I've been there many times. It felt too far away. When I could schedule it didn't feel like it fit with my calendar. I wasn't going to end up seeing the doctor that was the referral. And all those things were what I don't want. And I knew what I did want with much greater clarity, someone that's really close to where I live, where it's an easy drive, and where I would feel comfortable with the doctor. And so when I made the second call, even though he's not been referred to me by anyone I know specifically, I feel like he was referred to me by the universe, because all the indications felt really good when setting up this appointment with Dr. Tim. So anyway, I share that because that's how I live my life.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of go from kind of the breadcrumb, like whatever breadcrumb pieces of information I get, that's what I follow, and I trust them. And so even though I haven't seen him yet, I'm filled with really happy feelings about him. And because I'm filled with happy feelings about him, you know, what kind of experience do you think I'll have with him?
Oh, yeah. Very happy.
A happy one.
And there's a lot to be said for
that. Pardon me?
There's a lot to be said for that, for going into it feeling you're going to have a happy experience, because you will.
And what's interesting is, had I set up the appointment with Dr. Daniels, physician's assistant, and I don't know her, I was already filled with doubt and concern.
Yeah.
So that's what I would have brought with me into that appointment.
That's right.
You know, and it's just really fascinating how, you know, when you follow the feeling, follow the energy, you know, it's like, I know I've never been led astray when I follow my life in this way.
It also is a kind of a reinforcement for the idea that it isn't the doctor, it's you. Because you're the one who needs to feel good going in there. The doctor can't make you feel good.
Good,
you're the
point.
Only one who can do that.
I hadn't thought about that, Walt. That's a really excellent point. Wow.
I get a few of those every once in a while.
Very cool. So tell me, how was your weekend? What exciting things have happened for you that you want to share with me?
Oh, let's see.
Audience?
What did we do? Well, Sunday we continued our pattern of going out to check out open houses in the area. We're trying to do some very definite LOA attraction, and we're looking at houses that by traditional measure we shouldn't be looking at because they are nowhere near our price range, but we're saying to heck with that. We're going to attract it anyway.
That's what I did, and I am where I am.
Exactly. You know, hey, why not? You know, the worst thing that happens is we see some really nice houses. You know, that's actually pretty good. And
yeah.
It's also interesting.
I love house hunting.
Do you really?
Oh, yeah. It's so fun. You get so creative. You start to visualize yourself in different places. And I think that's part of how you get clarity on what you really want. And
well,
that's
what we've been doing. That's exactly what we've been doing. And in fact, it's working, but it's working in a way that I wasn't quite expecting. We've been doing it we've been doing it off and on since last fall, but very specifically, most recently, we've been doing it each of the last few Sundays for like the last three or four weekends. And so we've seen quite a few houses during that time period. And the thing that amazes me is how price has very little relationship to what you see. And I know that sounds strange to say, but it's true. I mean, there are some houses that we've seen that were priced, we'll call them, they're all relatively high priced houses, but there's like, you know, the very high, the high, and the pretty high. Okay. And we've seen some very high priced houses that weren't as good as some pretty high priced houses. And we've seen some houses that were like medium high priced houses that would just absolutely blow you away. And then others that were at the exact same price that were like, who would want to buy that? I mean, it's weird. And of course the agents, of course, are all telling us, oh, well, you know, this is a strong market and there's lots of competition. Da, 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 da. We're saying, yeah, 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 yeah. And there's something wrong with this pricing. I'm sorry. There just is.
I was going to say, I watch all these million-dollar listing shows on Bravo station. And so whether I'm watching the one in New York or Miami or L.A., it's like the prices can be so ridiculously different depending on which part of the city you're in. And I find that pretty darn amazing, because, like, when I went to buy my house, I really researched the whole Dallas Metroplex. And the reason I'm living in the city that I am is because you could get the biggest house for the smallest dollars per square foot.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, so it had to do with, like, I've always learned that if there's a, like a major highway going through a city, that the prices north of that highway will always be more expensive than the prices south of the city.
Okay.
I have no idea why that's the case, but I've kind of checked that out in multiple cities, and it seems to be true. So I went, well, you know what? Then I'm going to live south of the city. First of all, there's a whole less traffic down here.
Mm.
But also, if I can get more house for my buck, this is where I'm going.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah. The thing that, and I agree, there are lots of cities that have that kind of differentiation where there are certain, quote, desirable, unquote, areas and others that are not quite as desirable. And so the pricing is reflected in it. But where we're looking, it's known as the Farmington Valley, which is kind of northwest of Hartford, Connecticut. And it's where the nicer homes are in general. And there are, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 main towns and a number of smaller boroughs that are like sections of those towns and so forth. And they're all fairly comparable. I mean, some are a little bit more expensive than others and so forth. But, you know, for the most part, they're fairly comparable. And yet you look at the way the stuff is priced. I mean, like there are certain cases where there's a house that we looked at yesterday, and it's very centrally located. It's right close to all the good stuff. So the pricing on that one made sense. It was a relatively high price compared to the others, but it was a beautiful home. Interestingly, right next door to friends of my wife's, and we were kind of surprised. She said, oh, my God, it's right next door. Can you believe this? So we're looking at that one. But there were a few others that we looked at in the last few weeks, and they were in pretty desirable areas, priced about the same, and they're head-scratchers. I mean, there's one that I remember seeing last fall, in fact, that we saw, and we knew as soon as we saw it that it was going to get snapped up because the price was very low compared to everything else that was comparable to it. And it was in great shape. I mean, it was a really nicely done home. It didn't have all the latest and greatest of appliances. Maybe that's why it wasn't getting, you know, the top dollar that the others were. But, I mean, it was like a good $100,000, $150,000 less than these other houses that were, you know, just about the same size, the same amenities, and so on and so forth. And we're thinking, what on earth is going on there? And sure enough, that house did get sold very, very quickly. But it just goes to show the way people price houses really has very little to do with what the market is doing, which is pretty wild. So we're learning stuff. And we saw, I mentioned the one house we saw yesterday that was very nice, had a lot of nice features. There was only one bad part about that house. As we're getting ready to leave, with many of these houses, they have at the front a little sign that says, as you come in the door, please take off your shoes. And they give you those little booties that workmen wear so you're keeping the floors clean. And Louise, unfortunately, caught her foot on something, slipped on one of those things, and went flat on her face on the ground. Ow. It was really pretty bad.
Ow.
But she got up, and she was okay. She was more shaken than anything else. And she said, wow, I guess I really fell for this house. I swear, that's what she said. She really did say that.
Wow.
But
so now, you said there was one really bad thing. Now, if she's really fallen for this house, is that a good thing or is that a bad thing?
The bad thing was the fact that she fell. The good thing is that she got up and was able to come up with that line on the spur of the moment.
Oh, my goodness.
But yeah, so that's what we've been doing on our weekends, and it's been quite fascinating. We're definitely doing what you were talking about. We're definitely picking and choosing. You know, we like this, we don't like that, and so forth. And in fact, this last one that I just told you about that she fell for, that one had a lot of the things that we really like in a house. So you know, it's on our wish list for sure. But we're just, you know, putting out there. And an interesting thing is happening, too. I mentioned how these are really way outside of our price range. And so when I look at the prices on them, I'm having no reaction to them. I mean, literally, the price doesn't even enter my head. You know, I see the number and I say, yeah, okay.
Well, you know, that says a lot about where you are in your own personal journey.
Oh, yeah.
And how you're matching to what you want and not letting price deter you.
And that's literally what we're practicing, both of us. We are literally practicing exactly that, just stopping the whole thing about trying to figure out how are we going to afford it and getting that out of our minds entirely. And it's a different way to shop. It's a different way to look at houses. It's very different.
Well, I would say most people don't shop that way.
No.
But I think when you, well, either no pause, like law of attraction, or I didn't know law of attraction when I got my house, but I had such a sense of, I know somehow, some way what I want's going to show up. So, and it did. So.
But the only thing that I can think of that was a downer besides the fact that she fell to the ground was she was getting excited about a lot of the features of the house. And we were the only ones in there besides the realtor. There weren't any other house hunters there at that particular time. And we were, she was exclaiming loudly, oh, I love this. Oh, I love this. Oh, I love this. And then she stopped and said, it's a good thing that we aren't actually ready to buy this because I wouldn't be able to get a good price on this house after saying I love everything.
That's kind of true. But, you know, it's really interesting because I've studied real estate, and I'm not a realtor, but I've studied it from a real estate investing perspective. And one thing I love about real estate is that everything is negotiable.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
You know, it's not like walking into Walmart and the price is what the price is.
Right.
It's negotiable, and you really have no idea what's in the minds of the sellers. You don't know if they're desperate to sell or if they're motivated to sell, if they're just sick and tired of the house and they want out, or, you know, or if they, or on the contrary, they're like, yeah, I'm just testing the market to see if there's even any takers. They may not even be willing to sell.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all sorts of variables that can cause a price to be very, very, you know, negotiable. You can offer a whole lot less than what they're offering, and if they say no, they say no.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
You know? And if you don't insult them too terribly, they'll actually counteroffer.
Well, we would have to really severely insult the owner of this house, so we decided not to put any offer in at all because we don't like insulting people. But I will tell you this, as well priced as I thought the house was, I actually thought it was rather high for the current market. Not that it was high compared to other houses that are currently listed out there, but these are all houses that have been on the market for months now. I mean, this particular one, in fact, was on the market and taken off last fall because they couldn't sell it, and now they're trying to sell it again. And they don't seem to have moved the price very much. Others have actually said they moved their prices dramatically after doing that. They still don't have buyers. So I think like this, the seller's market as it is right now is high priced anyway. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with this house, because I'll tell you what, I can conceive of the idea that, you know, let's say that the show keeps taking off and all of a sudden we get some big sponsors coming in or something like that, or the gardening business for Louise has a even bigger launch than we're hoping for, and all of a sudden we're launched into a new price range just as the owner of that house, who hasn't gotten any bids, decides to lower their price.
That's very possible.
Yeah, I could see that happening. So, I'm not saying it has to happen that way, but that's okay.
That's cool. Well, I'm happy to hear that you're out there hunting.
Yeah.
And letting your inner beings just kind of guide you and bring you a little bit of clarity here and there, and, you know, as you're exploring, because that's to me, that's the fun part of the process. That's where you're in the journey. You're in the joy of the journey. You haven't, like, landed at the manifestation yet, but you're in the joy of the journey, which mm-hmm. I find very exhilarating.
It is fun. I mean, it's not something I would have thought in the past was fun, but it is fun. I'm enjoying it. You can just kind of feel free because you're not feeling the pressure to try to buy something. You can just feel free to imagine yourself in the place and, you know, how would we use this space? Oh, I love using that over there. I'm not crazy about that, so I'll forget about that. You can actually eliminate pieces of house in your mind because you're not trying to buy that house right now. So you can really be picky and choosy about it.
Yes, you can. I love it.
It's really very cool. Now, I'm not quite sure how this ties into the topic for today. It kind of did in the beginning, because your story actually tied in very nicely, I thought, because you were trying to find something that was nearby, some doctor who you felt like you could trust, who could take care of this fairly quickly for you. So that's the one that comes closest to the topic. But the topic is, we're still on section 2 of The Law of Attraction, The Basics of the Teachings of Abraham by Esther and Jerry Hicks. And we're up to the section that's entitled, What If I Want It to Happen More Quickly? Certainly something.
If anyone's following in the book, we're on the bottom of page 36.
36 of the paperback, yep. I can't tell you where it is if you're on a Kindle or another e-reader, because it could be just about anything. But in terms of the paperback, it's page 36. But this is a question that I think everybody asks at one time or another. In fact, it's probably one of the more common question, shall we say, that gets asked in the Facebook groups, which is, it's not showing up. Why isn't it showing up? How long do I have to wait? How quickly is it going to show up? People ask that question all the time.
Oh, I don't think there's anybody who hasn't asked that question.
Oh, yeah.
We all think we want it now.
Oh, of course we do.
And if it's not now, how fast can it show up? So,
that's
yeah,
right.
I purposely didn't read ahead because I want to be, you know, as surprised and delighted with the response as all our listeners will
okay.
be.
Well, then I'll read it to you then. So here we go. Get ready. It says, because of the law of attraction, matching thoughts are drawn together, and they do so, and as they do so, they become more powerful. And as they become more powerful, and therefore closer to manifestation, the emotion that you feel also becomes proportionately larger. When you are focused upon something that you desire, then through the law of attraction, more and more thoughts about what you desire will be drawn, and you will feel greater positive emotion. You can speed the creation of something simply by giving it more attention. The law of attraction takes care of the rest and brings to you the essence of the subject of your thought. So already they've introduced the concept of momentum. Now going on, it says, we would define the words want or desire as follows. To focus the attention or give thought toward a subject while at the same time experiencing positive emotion. When you give your attention to a subject and you feel only positive emotion about it as you do so, it will come very quickly into your experience. Sometimes we hear our physical friends speaking the words want or desire while at the same time feeling doubt or fear that their desire cannot be achieved. From our point of view, it is not possible to purely desire something while feeling negative emotion. Well, that's true. And that's an interesting thing. There are a lot of people who talk as if they are experiencing pure emotion, and then they follow that up immediately with some negative. I don't know that they even realize they're doing that.
I think that, to me, is something that, in order to use law of attraction in a deliberate way, being able to really hone in on what broadcast you're really emanating into the universe is kind of a learned practice or a learned art, because when I think I know for myself, when I first started using law of attraction and trying to use it deliberately, I thought because my words were so positive that I was doing all the right stuff, but manifestations were not coming quickly.
Right.
And then the more I learned, the more I started to recognize, and it took me a while to even recognize that I did have doubt as part of the equation. Because I got to tell you, I can be such a powerful wanter, and part of that is I do such a good job of denying everything that's to the contrary of what I want. And so I was so busy denying all my doubt, I wasn't recognizing all the doubt that actually did exist.
Which raises a good question.
So,
I mean, first of all, it's hard often to even notice the doubt. But when you do notice it, what is the best way to deal with that doubt so that you aren't just covering it up, so you're actually putting it to rest? How do you do that?
I start to ask it questions. So if there's something that I doubt, like, okay, I'll talk about my Project X, which is, you know, my experimental
project. Oh,
here we go. So, of course, I've had moments of doubt along the way because I put something out there that I really, really want, but I put some parameters of a date deadline around it, and I wasn't sure if I should do that because I thought here's interesting. I put the date really far out. And by putting it far out, it kind of lessened the doubt. But then one day, I felt an impulse where a date came to me, April 1st. No, I've never said this on the radio before. Yes, I'm letting it out of the bag.
Yeah.
April 1st. And when I heard April 1st, first of all, I was really excited because I was like, oh, yeah, that's sooner rather than later, because my old deadline was the end of June. That's the one I arbitrarily put on it. But I woke up one morning with this strong feeling of April 1st, and I knew I didn't make that up. So I'm like, okay, this is my inner being saying April 1st is the new target. And yes, I was excited. And while I was in, how do I say, like I was in a cocoon of my inner being, like, sending the signal to me, and I was just basking in it, and it felt really wonderful and yummy. Well, then I get up, I get dressed, I go about my day, and every now and then my thought will go back to April 1st, and now I wasn't in that emotional cocoon anymore. And now I'm like, holy crap.
Yeah.
What if I can't sustain the positive feeling that long? You know, what if I do something to screw this up? You know, it's like, oh, can these things all line up so that I can really make April 1st my target date? So, okay, now here's where your question is. I've now added doubt into the equation.
Absolutely.
What do I do to get rid of it?
Right.
So then I start asking the question, like, first of all, why do I think doubt is here? Why am I thinking that this can't happen? And I answered, well, because I've never been able to set a target that I'm aware of that I've ever met that date. And then I asked, is that really true? I'm like, well, I think it's true. I'm like, is it absolutely true? And I went, well, I do remember when we were trying to buy a house. I mean, there was a date attached to our closing date, and then something happened where, you know, there might be a financial glitch in the problem or a financial glitch on the pathway that would prevent us from being able to close, but the closing had a very specific date. And I'm like, and we managed to get through that, and whatever the glitch was, you know, we pushed through it, and things showed up in our experience, and all of a sudden that was okay. You know, and then I thought about some other things where I'm like, well, you know, it's kind of like when the outside world set a date for me, I always managed to make the date. And when I was in the costuming business, I remember saying to my partner when we thought, holy crap, there's no way we're going to meet this deadline. I said, Steve, we've never missed a deadline. And he'd go, you're right. We never miss a deadline. And we said, well, then somehow we're going to figure out a way, and we're going to keep the deadline. And we did, and we always managed to do it. So these are the thoughts that were kind of flying through my head. And I went, you know what? When I set my intention that I'm going to get something done by a certain date, it always gets done. Because I've never in my life missed a deadline. I'm like, Okay, so that started to make the doubt that I could make something happen by April 1st start to lessen. And then I kind of went to, okay, so now that I knew my doubt was lessening, I'm like, what can I do to kind of punch up the April 1st certainty? And I went, well, first of all, I didn't make up the date April 1st. That came from my inner being. And why would my inner being lie to me? I'm like, okay, well, that feels kind of good. If my inner being gave me this date, there must be something important about this date. I'm like, okay, so I think, April 1st is feeling really good. So the more I focused on the fact that my inner being came up with this date, not me, that had more power and more palatable strength. And so that's how I was able to dissipate that doubt. Have I had some other doubts with Project X? Sure. But in the same way, I just ask the doubts questions. I ask until I get to a positive resolution, because I'm no longer willing, and here's the big thing for me, Walt, I'm no longer willing to let doubt stay when I have awareness that it's there.
Well, that's a great thing. That's a really great thing. I like your approach, too, because, yes, you're asking the doubt questions, but you're asking the doubt questions with a very specific purpose in mind, and that purpose is to find new ways to feel better about it. Am I wrong?
No, that's exactly right. I was doing whatever it took to lessen the doubt with the intention of eliminating the doubt. Now, on something that's really big, like my Project X, on something that has so many unknown variables, like Project X, I don't know if you can ever have zero doubt. But I do know Abraham said this, has said this in a number of places and a number of times, that intense, like when you have a really strong, intense intention, that can actually override or overpower doubt or resistance on the trail.
That's interesting.
So, with that concept in mind, I no longer get concerned if there's a little bit of doubt. Because I'm a powerful wanter. When I want something, I want it. I focus on it. And if a little bit of doubt is there, you know what? This is my belief. My powerful wanting is going to just blow away whatever doubt's on the trail, and it's not going to make a hill of beans in terms of the broadcast that's being sent out, because there's no way on earth the universe is not picking up my powerful signal of what I want.
Well, I can personally affirm through my own knowledge the power of your wanting, because I've read the story, the first story that you submitted for the book, and the wanting that was involved in the acquisition of that house was off the charts. It just poured out of the pages. And once again, I'm teasing people I know, because you're not going to be able to find out about this story until the book comes out, which is going to be pretty soon. It's going to be in a few weeks. And once it comes out, those of you who are regular listeners, you're going to notice that you'll get an opportunity to get a free copy of the ebook. So you want to keep listening. But what I will tell you is, when I read your story, I was probably more amazed at the power of your desire than anything else, because, I mean, let's be perfectly honest, you had a lot of slings and arrows thrown at you, and you just brushed them aside like they were nothing.
Yep.
I mean, that's what you did, really. It was just, I mean, I feel like I'm kind of talking out of turn because I haven't read the book yet, but still, I mean, this was like a series of things that you just didn't get beaten down on at all, and anybody else would have walked away from a lot of it.
And I kind of agree with you, but, you know, I have to say, I really have always been a very powerful wanter. When I want something, I really, that's where, when I was a kid, I was called stubborn, and this is how I turn my stubbornness to my own advantage.
It's a good way to do it.
You know? Yeah, I'm stubborn when it comes to, I know what I want, and I'm not settling for anything except for what I want.
Yeah.
And even in the pursuit of Project X, it's interesting because you have pointed out on numerous occasions what a powerful wanter I am.
Mm-hmm.
And that was even part of something I used when I was trying to deal with my own doubt about, can I really move up the deadline to April 1st?
Oh, how so?
And I'm like, well, you know what? I am a powerful wanter. And Walt has reminded me what a powerful wanter I am. Mm-hmm. And then I would, you know, relive the story that I wrote, which was a true story. And I'm like, yeah, I have got a lot of persistence. And it's like, okay, and I want this. And I know that I want it sooner rather than later. And having an April 1st new deadline actually felt so much better than the arbitrary June 30th deadline that I put out there. And I think I've even mentioned, I put June 30th out there because it just felt like, oh, I have so much more time, and it was the non-scarier date.
Right. That was farther away.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm like, now it's like April 1st can't come fast enough. Because I'm really excited, and I focus on it a lot, a lot, a lot, a lot.
So I guess part of your answer to the question of this subsection, what if I want it to happen more quickly, part of your answer is want it strongly.
And if you notice that, do you have anything that feels like you have beliefs that are contrary to what you want, start asking those contrary beliefs questions. Start shooting holes in them. Start disproving them. Whatever you have to do to lessen their lessen your belief in them.
Mm.
So you start to no longer believe in them.
Yeah, you don't want them to have any power over you. You definitely don't want that. So you're challenging their power, really.
Yeah, when you no longer believe in the doubts, then doubts no longer exist. You've morphed them. And that energy changes into something else. And that's why my process was, I wanted to lessen the doubt, but then I wanted to shift around and I wanted to punch up the energy on my belief that April 1st was very doable.
Now let's see what your reaction is to the next section of this this subsection, because it raises the question about the words wanting and desire. It says, pure desire is always accompanied by positive emotion. Perhaps that is why people disagree with our use of the words want or desire. They often argue that wanting implies a sort of lack and contradicts its own meaning, and we agree. But the problem is not with the word or the label itself, but instead with the state of emotion expressed while using the word. It is our desire to help you understand that you can get to wherever you want to be from wherever you are, no matter where you are or what your current state of being. The most important thing to understand is that your mental state of being or your attitude in the moment is the basis from which you will attract more. So the powerful and consistent law of attraction is responding to everything in this vibrational universe, bringing people with matching vibrations together, bringing situations with matching vibrations together, and bringing thoughts with matching vibrations together. Indeed, everything in your life, from the way thoughts roll across your mind to the people you rendezvous with in traffic, is the way that it is due to the law of attraction. So they mention the desire and wanting thing, and then they basically do a summary on what it takes to make it happen more quickly. But what about that, about desire and wanting? I mean, I know what my take on it is, but what's yours?
Well, I mean, I totally agree. I've said this many times. It's not the words that we use that are important. It's the emotion that we're feeling, because it's that feeling that's being broadcast. So, like, just like last week, you and I were using the word consequence in different ways.
Right.
Mm-hmm. To you, consequent was kind of a neutral thing. It's just, it's more like the result of an action.
Right.
And for me, consequence had a negative connotation. And, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't want to deliver a consequence because I didn't want to do anything that was negative.
Right.
And you really helped see from your definition that it's kind of like it's neutral. So in this case, when it comes to the word want, if a person has kind of habitually been trained to think of want as in the lack of something because you're left wanting, then you know what? Don't use that word. And if desire has a positive connotation, use that word. If some other word has a positive emotion attached to it, then use that word. But I really don't think that the word is important, but the feeling is. And I think you could tell when I say I'm a strong wanter, that is a pure place.
Oh, yeah.
That's when I'm wanting something that's exciting to me, and I'm so enthusiastic about having it come into my experience. It's like want is a happy word. It's a good word for me.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
it
doesn't hold the connotation of lack. But if it did, I wouldn't use it.
And for me, it used to have the connotation of lack. I've managed actually to make that connotation go away in my own mind over the last few years or so. Because early on, wanting, it wasn't so much I necessarily associated it with lack, but I knew others did. And so I didn't know, well, which way should I use it? Again, reaching outside of myself instead of inside myself for the answer. I hadn't really learned this whole thing about reaching inside for the answer. But it has gotten to the point now where wanting and desire used to be my go-to word. That was the one that I felt was the positive one. Now they're almost the same in terms of their positivity. I'd have to say desire still feels a little bit more positive to me. So if I want to reach for something extra, I'll say desire rather than want. But nevertheless, they're pretty close in my mind. But I agree with you. It really comes down to what you believe. What do you actually have a positive or a negative connotation? That's what you should use. That's what anyone should use. And
I remember when I was in junior high, sitting on the edge of my mom's bed, and she and I were best friends, and so I could share anything with her. And I remember being in tears, saying, "Mom, I want a boyfriend. When am I going to get a boyfriend? How is that ever going to happen?" Well, I got to tell you, when I was using the word want then, it had tons of lack in it.
Yeah.
So, you know, somewhere in my life, I have transitioned from how I use the word want, because when I was young, I used the word want a lot, and I was using it in conjunction with all the things I didn't have.
And that is what they're reinforcing in that last paragraph that I read. The second sentence, the most important thing to understand is that your mental state of being or your attitude in the moment is the basis from which you will attract more. They don't say anything about the word,
right.
Just the attitude.
And, you know, I had been through, you know, probably in my 20s and 30s, I had been through so many goal setting workshops and, you know, how to set, it's called a SMART goal, which is like, I don't know, specific and measurable and actionable and blah, blah, blah. You know, SMART stands for all these different attributes
okay.
of how to set an appropriate goal.
Right.
I can't remember what are in the TR. But the point was, when I was learning all this stuff, I was, in terms of the wording, you know, what I was being taught was use positive words. But nobody bothered to mention, because I doubt anyone was aware of it who was teaching it, how to make sure that those positive words weren't laced with negative emotion.
Yeah.
Because I got to tell you, when I would turn in my goal and the instructor would look it over, you know, mine was the one that was right out in front of the classroom saying, oh, this is an excellent SMART goal. You know, Wendy put in here all of the attributes that are just absolutely fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
And can I tell you what? I didn't manifest one of them. Not one. And that was why I kind of gave up on the whole concept of doing SMART goals. NLP also teaches SMART goals. I think that may be where that originally came from, and then people started teaching goal setting using SMART goals. But I kind of went, yeah, that doesn't work. Now, I think it does for some people, but I didn't understand yet what the distinction was that caused it to work for someone else in that same classroom as me and not me, even though mine was the one that was projected in the front of the room as a perfect template for how to set up a SMART goal.
Yeah, right. Well, it raises another point that I think kind of ties into all this. Again, it's about words, I suppose, but it's also about the intentions that go along with them, and that's the idea of a deadline. Now, you mentioned with Project X, you had originally set a far-off deadline, and then you had replaced it with one that you were inspired to change it to of April 1st, a more near deadline. And for I've always thought that deadlines were one of those things that could be a two-edged sword. On the one hand, if it could feel really good and it could feel exciting, or on the other hand, it could feel a little bit scary, like that's a pretty close deadline there, bud. And
well,
I couldn't understand.
I agree with you.
I just wanted to finish. I couldn't understand why it was that it was so important to set the deadline. I mean, because there are some who swear by it. You have to set a deadline. If you don't set a deadline, you'll never get it done. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, but I dread it. I mean, is that really good? That's what I was thinking to myself, and I was right to question it. I didn't have the answer at the time, but it's really a two-edged sword.
Well, and the answer, I think, to the question of the deadline that you set, is it going to work for you or not, has everything to do with how it feels when you focus on that deadline.
I agree.
Because with Project X at first, June 30th felt close enough that it was still within, range that I still need to focus on it because there's still some things that need to line up to have that happen. But it was far enough away that it gave me a sense of relief that it wasn't immediate because my belief wasn't to have it happen immediately. Well, then when I was inspired and received April 1st as the new deadline, it was exciting at first. And then, as I got rid of any doubts that showed up later, as I settled into it, I went, you know what? Pushing it out to June 30th really now started to feel heavy and uncomfortable, where at first that was the good one.
Mm-hmm.
And now
I
went, no, it feels like I have to hold on in this anticipation stage way too long. And it wouldn't be doable for me to hold on for that long. I need to, get to that point and then move on. And so it's kind of like this time the new target of April 1st is far enough away that I feel like it's doable, but it's close enough that it causes me to stay on track. That's the point I wanted to really introduce. It's close enough that I realize I can't just let my guard down and just stop focusing, you know, and go, oh, well, I'm on autopilot. It's like, no, it's close enough. I've got to do my work, and my work is to stay in a positive place and stay focused on it, because that's what Abraham says, you know, at the top of page 37. If you want to speed up the creation, then you better really be focused on the thing that you want.
That's right. Yeah, in fact, literally it says you can speed the creation of something simply by giving it more attention. The law of attraction takes care of the rest and brings to you the essence of the subject of your thought. So there's the promise right there. And I agree with you. I think that the whole question really comes down to how it feels. Because the moment that any deadline feels bad for any reason, creates any sense of doubt, it's basically working against you. And, you know, you're working against yourself. You've said something that you don't feel is a good thing for whatever reason. It doesn't matter what the reason is. You just don't feel good about it. So that's like the best reason not to, to set a deadline. The only time that I think a deadline really is helpful, and it is very helpful in these cases. Sure, yes, it'll help you, you know, move you along. Okay, yeah, I have to stay focused. That's good. But even more importantly, a deadline is great when you're dealing with a project where there is more than one person involved. And you want to generate excitement on that project. So if you set what seems like a really tight deadline for the purpose of generating excitement, and you actually succeed in generating the excitement, then the deadline is fueling that excitement. And that, to me, works really well.
And I know you're talking about having your authors get their chapters in, and use, because you set a really tight deadline.
I did, and then I did something you're not supposed to do according to the deadline advocates. I set a tight deadline, and then as we got close, I let people out and said, no, well, that's all right, you can have a little extra time. Because I really just wanted them to get the job done. And it worked. Right. I got people who were saying, well, I don't know if I can get it done that soon. And I'd say, well, you know, how much more time do you need? And they'd say, well, can I have a couple more days? Oh, sure, yeah, you can have a couple more days. That's okay. I was willing to give them 2 more weeks, and they were taking 2 more days.
Well, your tight deadline set a fire under me, because I was one of the people that immediately said, Walt, are you kidding? It's too tight a deadline. And you gave me the reason why. You know, and you even gave me an out clause. You said, Wendy, you're one of the co-hosts. If you know, you needed a couple more days, you know, I'm not going to say no to you. But what happened was, without me verbalizing it to you, I just started thinking about it, going, well, his deadline is 2 weeks out. That doesn't feel like enough time. I'm like, okay, what can I rearrange in my life? How can I prioritize in order to get this done? And I was one of the first people to actually
submit
my chapter.
Which was funny, because your original reaction was, I'm going to need at least a month on this thing.
At least. And instead, I took a week, you know. And now, I probably today or tomorrow, I'm going to submit my third chapter.
Which is really great. But it just illustrates it. I think this is what the deadline advocates were really hoping for when they set the deadline, when they said, always make sure you set a deadline and stick to it. I think they were hoping that it would turn into something exciting, but they didn't verbalize that. And I don't know why verbalize it, but I think that's what they were aiming for.
And I kind of agree with you, because I will say that when I don't set a deadline, things just don't ever happen. It's like I don't get focused, I don't stay consistent with it, and I kind of forget about it, and it goes onto the back burner. But when I put a deadline on something, I always make it happen. Even if I don't hit the – now, I know I just said, you know, I never miss a deadline. Now, when it comes to business, I never miss a deadline. When I set my own deadline, where it really is – I'll call it a floating date, because I'm the one who can control whether it happens by a certain date or not. Like, if the April 1st date – doesn't pan out, my world does not come to a crashing halt.
That's a good thing.
I can still move it out to April 15th or to May 1st, and it's not going to like ruin the essence of what I'm wanting to create with having the fulfillment of Project X. But I will say that by having an earlier target, and this could be why my inner being threw it out as April 1st, because let me tell you, it lit a fire under me. I'm not letting go of this one, because to do something by April 1st, I also have to do something by the beginning of March. Well, the beginning of March to me is really soon, so I internally have another deadline that has to happen before April 1st. And so because it's so soon in my experience, you know, when I look at the calendar, I can't let up on working towards this. But if I left it at June 30th, you know, what was going to trigger me then to, like, really start putting my effort into it?
Mm-hmm.
And so, to me, what that really brings up is we could have anything by almost any date we want if we just deliver pure energy.
Yes. Yes, exactly true. And that's where I think we gain perspective on how this whole deadline thing actually works. Because the whole purpose of a deadline, really, is to help us, not to harm us. The moment that a deadline is working against us is the moment to drop it. But if we can harness it as a way to encourage ourselves to build our energy and build our enthusiasm and build our excitement, then deadlines serve a tremendous purpose, because they're basically an outside influence, or in some ways you can say an inside influence because we set it for ourselves. But they're an influence that we're using to encourage ourselves to go within and dig deeper, as they say, right? To dig deeper and to really get into that high-flying feeling place, that place of being in the vortex, as they say. And I can't say I've spent a lot of time in the vortex, but the time I've spent there tells me that's definitely the place to be, especially if you want to, you know, if you have something that you're wanting to do, if you're on, you know, a journey that's an exciting journey and you want to be in on that journey. Boy, when you're doing it, when you're inside that vortex, that's fun. That's when all the crazy stuff happens.
Just to let everybody know, the vortex is not a magical place because it has a special word. The vortex is the same thing as every time we are in an alignment with our inner being, meaning we're feeling good, we're feeling on top of it, we're feeling a state of appreciation and joy. When you're in that place, you are in the vortex.
Yeah, absolutely true, and an excellent point. And it does actually remind me of something.
I want to say, Walt, I think you're in the vortex much more than you acknowledge or have awareness of.
I am gaining more awareness of it thanks to working with people like you, because you're helping me to see it. So I appreciate that. I do realize I'm probably there more than I realize. One of my goals is to realize it. And that's serious. I mean, I'm laughing at that, but that's seriously a very definite goal of mine. Now, one other thing about the vortex I do want to mention. Listeners also get to be in the vortex. And one of the ways you can be in the vortex, well, there are a number of ways you can do it. One is, if you haven't been a subscriber yet, this is the time to do it. You want to take advantage of the fact that subscribing is actually pretty easy. I've described it before, but here it is in a nutshell. LOAtoday.net, go to the homepage, click on the buttons. That's pretty straightforward. If you have an iPhone, it just walks you right through it. You can also do it through the iTunes store, by the way. Do a search for LOA Today there. If you're on an Android phone, such as a Motorola, a Samsung, an LG, a Nokia, Google, any of those Android devices, you need to get a piece of software installed at first. Before you do it, it's got to be, you know, some sort of a podcast player or a podcast manager. There's a nice free one in the Play Store called Podcast Manager. You can find a lot of others there, too. But just make sure you install one of those. And then once you do that, then through the software, you can do a search on LOA Today, and boom, we'll pop up. So lots of easy ways to do it. And then the second part is share. And you asked, Wendy, are there any other wins? There actually is another win that I forgot about. And that is, we now have a whole bunch of social media icons on the website on every single page. So you can instantly share with Facebook, share on Twitter, share on LinkedIn, share on Reddit. There are like 15 buttons there on every single page, and it'll take you to your account in your favorite social media. I mean, you like WhatsApp, it'll take you to WhatsApp. It'll take you everywhere. So no more excuses about sharing anymore. Everybody can share really easily, which we want people to do because we need more and more people to find out about the show. And then the final thing I want to recommend to everybody to keep in mind, especially when it comes to wanting to get into and stay in the vortex. Tom Wells and I, once again, we're going to be doing a new episode of the show Tuesday nights, starting tomorrow night. That's at 9 p.m. Eastern time. And we are doing it for the express purpose of encouraging people to call, because it's harder to call during the day. A lot less excuses about calling at night. So if you've been wanting to call, maybe get a little free coaching help. Maybe you want to share an experience. Maybe you want to share a win, whatever it is. Please give us a call Tuesday night, because we're doing this as a test. We want to find out, do people really want to call in? This is going to be your opportunity. So just want everybody to know about that.
And Tom is a really awesome coach. So if you want to have a coaching question, it's a great opportunity to get a free couple moments of coaching.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And he loves it, too. I mean, I know all of you guys do, but he loves it. He just enjoys it so much. And before we leave all of the commercial messages, one of the commercial messages we need from you, Wendy, which is, you're a coach. You do actually a pretty good job of it. Somebody wants to talk to you. How can they get a hold of you?
They can find me at wendydillard.com, and all my contact info is available on every page.
All right. That's great. Well, We're slowly making progress with this book. We figured we would take a while, and it has taken a while, but it's great. I'm loving the conversation. We'll do it again tomorrow. Sound good to you?
Sounds good to me. I'll be here.
All right. I'll be here, too. We hope you're going to join us as well here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye.